The following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, joined by the Elmer's Glue of Track Wrestling, Andy Hamilton. And we are in it, man.
We are in it.
I'm going to my first Beast of the East, and I'm jacked.
You getting into beast mode?
I'm in beast mode, man. Full beast mode. And I've heard of this tournament, of course, and I didn't follow it super close, but now that I'm full on going and into this job and into this tournament, which will be on Track Wrestling nonetheless, I can't wait to go out to Delaware.
That makes two of us, Kyle.
Yeah. And there's a lot of reasons you're excited. And it starts, I think, with the Philly cheesesteak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're hitting up Geno's.
Isn't that the number one thing we're doing once we get to Philadelphia is going, making a beeline to Geno's?
Probably after baggage claim that might. And rental car, that's probably okay. Maybe the next stop.
Okay, so
quite possibly.
It's going to be just like, all right, that's our mission. Because when you brought it up, it was like, hey, we're going to get a Philly cheesesteak.
Oh, yeah.
It was almost like, this is automatic. This is a part of the
not
trip.
Debatable.
Right. So we're
non-negotiable.
Tell us about Geno's. I want to learn about this.
Well, there's Geno's and Pat's. And I just remember going in 2011 when NCAAs are out there. And at Pat's, like, I got scolded, I think, for not like ordering correctly. And I don't know. I mean, I've just never wanted to go back since. Like, hey, you want to yell at me for bringing my business to you? Then I'm going to take it somewhere else. So I'll take it across the street to Geno's. I don't get yelled at Geno's. Okay.
And was there,
and I thought the cheesesteak was absolutely every bit as good, if not better there.
Do you get onions on it?
No.
Okay, good. I just couldn't imagine doing a cheesesteak with onions. So I'm really glad we're on the same team on that one.
So but, you can go to Pat's if you want. I'm going to Geno's. I'm team Geno's.
Well, you're the one bringing this journey to me, so I'm going to just go where you go on this. You're my guide to the Philly cheesesteak on this trip. And there's just a lot of things exciting about this. And, of course, the Philly cheesesteak, but talk about the beast. I think the one thing that sticks out in my mind is that when you said you'll know how good this is when you watch the consolation first round.
Yeah, first couple of rounds of consolations, like there'll be some really, really good wrestlers that you think probably have no business being in first round or second round consolations. Then, as the tournament goes along, we're going to see quite a few upsets. I think there were a couple number one. Couple guys ranked number one nationally last year that got clipped on day two of the tournament in the quarters and semis. And I think last year we had like, what, seven or eight, maybe national number ones competing in the tournament. So it's going to be a pretty strong field again, and looking forward to getting out there and seeing some tough East Coast contestants, New Jersey, PA, of course, Blair Academy is going to be there. There are going to be some top-notch individuals like, you know, Lake Highland Prep will be there up from Florida. So lots of kids that we don't get a chance to see out here in the Midwest with regularity, but certainly names that we know and resumes that we know as well.
And one of those guys that won Beast of the East will be on this show, Troy Nickerson, head wrestling coach at Northern Colorado. He won an NCAA championship for Cornell in 2009. He won Beast of the East and had a match in the finals against Coleman Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about what could transpire and then what will happen down the road, you think of two future NCAA champions, both head wrestling coaches in D1. Coleman Scott won an Olympic bronze medal in 2012. So those types of matches, you have to expect that when we're talking about this 10 years from now, and we will be in our 50s, that we'll look back and say, those guys wrestle at Beast of the East and look at what they're doing now. So you just have to expect that those things will likely happen. So I'm fired up about it. So we'll have conversations with Troy Nickerson on Beast of the East. Let's get to our mailbag. We'll kick things off. We didn't do this last week because I didn't submit anything, but I had a question from me to me.
Yes.
In our Kyle to Kyle mailbag option. And that is, Kyle, do you have at times trouble pronouncing names? And the answer is yes, I do. There are times where I really struggle. The one that comes to mind, and it shouldn't have been, because once I get it in my head, is Verclearen from Penn State. I butchered that for probably months. And then what happens is once I get it in my head, like Henry Cejudo, I could see how people might have a hard time pronouncing that at times. Once I get it, I'm locked in. But I don't know how Jason Bryant does it. I don't know what his system is, because there's times where Krieger could be pronounced Kruger. How you know the difference, I guess it's just figuring things out along the line. But Jason has a system, and I don't know that he really gets it wrong. Any idea what his way of knowing the right pronunciation
maybe
is?
Maybe going to the person and asking them how to say their name.
It could be, but you can't do that with everyone.
Why not?
How do you do that, though? That's just a huge, huge task to be able to do that.
Have I been saying Klingman right through these years?
Well, mine is so phonetically correct. Like, how do you butcher that? It's actually easier than Hamilton. I know that it's not a common name, but it's really phonetically really easy. No one's ever said my name wrong unless they don't know the last name. So, for example, Kyvan Gadson thought my last name was Klingham for the longest time. So he was calling me Kyle Klingham. And so he even said that all the way up to him winning an NCAA championship. And we knew each other for years, and he didn't have my last name right. So thanks, Kyvan. Appreciate the love and support and knowing my last name. Next mailbag item comes from our recurring guest. He's a recurring guest on the show, and that's Scott Beck. He's always got something up his sleeve. Like, he's part of the show now. You almost can't have an on the mat without Scott Beck. And he just had comments about the national duels. And he just, I don't know if he checked into it that much, but he just couldn't believe how great the national duels was up at the Uni Dome. And he's all on board with, like, hey, this is ridiculous that we don't have a system where dual meets actually count for anything. And it seems pretty simple. You look at what the NFL does. You look at what the college football does. You even look at what FCS football does with 24 teams. It seems like having a set amount of duels, you have, let's just say, 12 to 16 dual meets throughout the season. And then each conference automatically sends one. And we have seven conferences right now. So the conference champion sends one automatically to the NCAA championships dual event. And then you either have 16 or 24, and then you pare it down from there. That's pretty standard. It seems pretty easy to make that happen, but it's just a matter of where do you put the NCAA championships, the traditional tournament. Absolutely. I think we said this last time, do not get rid of the team scoring element on that. Like, that, no. That would wreck it. So don't do that. But how fun would that be when you go to Princeton versus Iowa and you know it actually means something? It just really changes the game a lot and how you juggle your lineup. And if you have a power team, then maybe you don't wrestle Spencer Lee at that because you know you're going to win. But it really does put the onus on dual meets and seems like a pretty simple system. Your thoughts on
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I'm all for just, I want a dual champion. I think a lot of people want a dual champion.
Seems like,
I don't know, maybe not. Maybe we're the only ones saying this.
No, I mean, Tom Ryan was on our 7 minutes, and he said that's, if he was the president of all of wrestling, that's what he would change. He would make a dual meet championship with consequences, because that's what drives people. Because that's what he said. He said on the interview, he said, right now it's just an event. You go there just to enjoy it, and it's part of it. And I guess maybe if it comes down to Penn State and Iowa, it might be the dual meet championship. But does anyone really think about that ever? I mean, you think about winning the Big Ten championship, the tournament part, but I guess I never put any stock in who wins the Big Ten dual meet championship. Maybe schools do more than I think, but I know probably when you were covering Iowa that it wasn't a real big thing to you to point out who won the dual meet championship in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I don't know that a lot of people were really plugged into the standings I think obviously when a big dual meet comes around, people are interested, but I don't think they're thinking about consequences more than, you know, just who wins on that given day or night.
And it's just theater now. It's just hopefully you get a good meet, and hopefully the guys you want to see don't forfeit or decide that they have something else they would like to do. So it really is. We've talked about it so much, and what's perplexing is that we were on this cusp, and it seemed like the coaches were split 50-50 when they had that epic summit where all the coaches came together. And now we've regressed to that point where it's just not even there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, duels, that's stuff it. Gets forgotten about, right? I mean, you just, people that are fighting on one side get tired of fighting, and they, you know, get distracted by some other issue. You know, now we're talking regional training centers. That's the hot topic, where it's no longer national duels, it's RTCs. So if the RTC thing, if that just gets bandied around here for a while and all it is talk and there aren't any significant changes, then at what point does something else come along and replace that? You know, it's like, well, you know, how many years did Jay Robinson bang the drum for moving the season? Every year at the NCAA championships, the Wednesday press conference, the day before the NCAA championships, you would hear Jay talking about that, and other coaches would chime in too, but Jay was the one leading that charge. And it was that way for probably 5-10 years or so. And now it never gets mentioned anymore.
Mike Moyer's point, he's the president of the NWCA's, is he always says, don't worry about if coaches like it. And he always uses the 3-point line that the there was not good reception of that. Now it's just absolutely changed the scope of the game. I think we just have to look at it that way. All coaches are not going to agree, so you have to implement it. And then once the pressure's on there, that this is a championship event, and if you want to have that NCAA championship on your mantle, this is what you have to do. And
except it's not an NCAA championship right now.
It's not. It's not. And that's what I'm saying, is that until it gets to that point, it's never going to have a meaningful part to our sport. So hopefully some changes can come down the pike. It doesn't get mentioned as often as it should. We just accept the narrative that's in front of us, but we have to keep pushing for that. And as we think about maybe reasons why it's not as important, because, hey, there's a lot of freestyle wrestling coming up. And as we've talked about, the Olympic red shirts have certainly altered the scope of this season in a very, very noticeable way. The senior national championships are coming up next week, and one Spencer Lee is going to be entered in that. And we get a chance to see him compete in his first freestyle event, I think, since high school.
Since junior world championships 2016.
So he has not competed in a freestyle event since then.
Correct.
Okay.
So, during this quad.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we get a chance to see him in freestyle. Are you excited about it? Because I am. I want to see what it's going to look like and see what he does. And
sure,
you hear about how great his gut wrench is, and he can turn guys on top.
Lace.
So, yeah, just I'm excited to see what he can do there. What do you think in that bracket? I mean, where does he fit in? I mean, some compelling matchups there with Nashawn Garrett being at 57 kilos and just some solid guys. Of course, there's going to be some guys that will not be in that because they do not have to be, but I think it's going to be fun to see who comes out of 57 kilos.
Yeah, absolutely. All these weights, right? I mean, will we see guys who have already qualified for the Olympic trials competing in Fort Worth to keep other guys out of the Olympic trials? I'm sure that's going to happen at some weights. Jordan Oliver, for instance, 65 kilos. Let's try to snag a spot from somebody else. One less guy you have to compete against out in state college. And also, just some guys just want to compete. So, hey, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see how it goes and who can take the pressure off themselves for later down the road. Because we're only looking at, what, one more tournament after this for the non-college guys. You got the last chance. And then the college guys who are in it, if they don't qualify in this tournament, then the onus is on them to win the NCAA title, get themselves in that way.
Yeah,
of course, they still have the last chance after that, but you want to clear the deck, I think, and have your ticket punched at this point.
Yeah, you want to do it now and get that burden off yourself so that I think there's probably a little added pressure going into the NCAA championships if you haven't qualified, knowing that you have to win it in order to get to the Olympic trials. And you want to do it now with these situations because, hey, that 4-year window is a long time away, and you just don't know what can happen in those situations. Just look at some of these guys where they may have had a good Olympic quad and it just never comes back. And we've just seen a few of those situations where you say that young guy really looked good. He's going to climb up the ladder. And for whatever reasons, whether it's injuries or just other things, it just doesn't materialize like it could. And so, yeah, you definitely have to do it now. But
well, you want to give yourself as many opportunities as possible, right? I mean, look at 2016, how many people picked Frank Molinaro to make the team? Yeah. How many people were expecting Jaden Cox to make the team at that point? I mean, he wasn't even thinking about wrestling, right? He wasn't even planning to wrestle in the 2016 trials. And then he cuts down to 86. And, you know, a few months later, he's an Olympic bronze medalist.
Yeah. That story doesn't get told enough. That's a really great run that he had in college. And then, of course, Kyle Snyder makes the team during college as well. So you just have those people, and the data now backs it up that you have in 2016, you had two college guys make the team and win medals and then come back the following season and win NCAA championships. So it not only can be done, but I think the expectations are it will be done with a lot of these guys, that they have the high level talent. Fired up about Beast. I think that's the number one thing we want to get to with Troy Nickerson. If you don't have anything you want to continue talking about, what do you say we get to Troy Nickerson?
Let's cut to the chase, Kyle.
Our guest today is Northern Colorado head wrestling coach Troy Nickerson. He picked up an NCAA championship for Cornell back in 2009. How are you, Troy?
I am doing well. How are you doing today?
Well, I got to just get to the bottom of this. Andy says you are a diehard Yankees fan, and I need to know, is it to the obsession level of Andy where he's checking every single push alert that comes onto his watch on his phone?
I'd tell you, it's probably pretty close. I don't know if I'm quite as diehard as Andy, but it's pretty dang close. I know signing Garrett Cole, last week, was pretty dang exciting. I got a couple other Yankee fans on my team here, and they're texting me like crazy.
We got a nice pack of Yankee fans. Like Scott Goodale, Joe Dubuque, yourself, me.
We do, you know, it's always nice to give, you know, those guys from up in Boston some heat every once in a while.
Do you watch a lot of the games?
I do. I mean, it's one of the reasons why, when we moved out here, I told my wife, you know, I don't care what TV package we get, you know, as long as we've got Yes.
How many Yankees games have you been to in Yankee Stadium?
I've probably only been to probably about a handful in the new stadium. Certainly went to more at the old stadium, you know, obviously when I was a lot closer. But the new stadiums, I mean, it's definitely nice. You grow to appreciate the history of the old one, but it's definitely pretty special.
Of course, you grew up in New York. Was it just implemented into you that you had to be a Yankees fan, or did it just come naturally?
You know, it was a little of both. Everybody kind of, you know, the Binghamton area for the most part is a Yankee fan, you know, so, I mean, it was easy to have that camaraderie and, you know, just be able to root for the same team for sure.
And then how about a couple of favorite players from the Yankees?
Oh gosh. I mean, I'm an old school guy, you know? So, I mean, for me, it's, you know, it's Pettit, it's, you know, our closers. I mean, you know, you got, you know, the Jeters. I mean, you know, just like those, you know, historic player. I mean, those are the guys that, you know, really got me into the game and, you know, that I've loved to follow, you know, throughout their careers. You know, the new guys, I mean, we're kind of, you know, I don't know. I'm looking for, you know, some new guys to follow here right now, honestly. But, you know, again, as soon as we signed Cole there the other day, I mean, that was, you know, I instantly became a fan of him because he's kicked our butts so many times. So,
do you remember where you were when Derek Jeter hit that walk-off single?
Final at-bat of his career, I think, is the one Kyle's talking about.
Oh, gosh. I couldn't tell you. I unfortunately, I could not tell you. I think I was probably on the road somewhere. I couldn't remember though. I'm sure Andy does.
Oh, he does. It's a big deal for him. It's imprinted in his brain. But pretty cool that you follow the Yankees so passionately. And we're coming up on a tournament that gets followed passionately too, and that's Beast of the East. And you have some memories from that. And when you talk about just major wins, you've won Beast of the East. What's it take to win such a monster tournament? The brackets are huge. And just tell us what it's like to win that major tournament.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely going back a little ways. But, you know, I mean, it was definitely a good feeling. I feel like Beast of the East was kind of that tournament that got me kind of onto the scene, you know, when I was in those early years of high school. You know, I remember, you know, going out, and I think I was a sophomore at the time when I first went. And, you know, I was wrestling up at 112 pounds, wasn't really cutting any weight. And I remember seeing, you know, a couple of days before that Coleman Scott was cutting down to 12. And I was like, oh, man, that's a big task. But, you know, fortunately for me, I was able to go out there and get the win. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, seeing those tournaments still being successful right now, I mean, it's definitely nice to see the history continue.
I think it was a 4-2 match in the finals. What do you remember about that win against Coleman?
I remember he was enormous. You know, I was doing everything I could to survive. I think I might have reversed them or something. I can't remember exactly, to kind of take it into overtime. And then I got that last score in you know, overtime. I think I hit him with a knee pick. You know, again, I mean, it was just kind of one of those matches where I had to really be pretty dang strategic to be able to, you know, to get the win.
You know, I know your high school, that wasn't a regular stop for them, was it? I mean, you guys kind of came in for a couple years there, and you know, I don't know that they've been there here recently. What, do you remember how you guys got in the Beast, and what led you to go down there?
Well, you know, for me, it was just my coach, you know, trying to give me the opportunities to go out and see that national level competition, you know. So I think it might have been both years that we went. I think I went my sophomore, my junior year. But, you know, it was really just, you know, a handful of us. I think we took maybe, you know, six guys down there, you know, which, looking back on it, I mean, I probably didn't understand at the time. But, you know, with the match count, you know, tournament count in those days, I mean, it's, you know, it was really a huge sacrifice for the team, allowing, you know, me especially to be able to go and do that. So, you know, I think we had some other guys that definitely went and won some matches. But, you know, it was just, you know, a great opportunity for me to be able to go out there and get it done.
Was it in the Carpenter Center there at Delaware back then?
It was, yeah.
What did you think, you know, being, you know, 15, 16 years old, stepping out, you know, I don't know, maybe a dozen mats and several thousand people in the stands? What kind of environment was it like for that tournament?
I mean, it was definitely, you know, nice. I mean, for me, again, you know, when I'm kind of in the zone, I mean, you know, I don't really see anything other than that opponent out there on the mat, you know, so it was just another wrestling match for me. But, you know, I mean, kind of those big stages, I mean, you know, I think it really helps prepare those younger athletes for, you know, for that next level of competition, you know, kind of the NCAA championships and so on and so forth. So, again, I didn't really think too much of it at the time, and, you know, just worrying about going out there and trying to get my hand raised.
Compare it to winning the state championship. Of course, you did that five times, but how do you compare and contrast the level of difficulty?
I mean, it's definitely tougher in regards to the fact that, I mean, you know, you're probably seeing tougher competition at a tournament like the Beast of the East versus, you know, the state championship. But, you know, again, when I was competing in New York, it was also one state title, you know. So, I mean, it was all divisions, you know, so that was certainly a tough task as well. But, you know, I mean, just, you know, trying to be perfect in every match, you know, I mean, that's what it takes. I mean, you see it time and time again, you know, the best guy in the weight class, you know, very often doesn't win, you know, it's who's having the best day. And, you know, I think, again, I, you know, really did a nice job of preparing, I think, when I was competing, you know, for, you know, being at the top of my game each and every time I stepped on the mat. And, you know, luckily I was able to come out on top more often than not.
When you go against a guy like Coleman Scott and some of the competition you have in high school, does it cross your mind that these guys are going to be good down the road and that these guys are going to really make a difference on the not only national scene, but for Coleman Scott, he won a bronze medal at the Olympics.
Yeah, I think at the time, you know, it's hard to really conceptualize that. But I mean, obviously going back on it and, you know, I mean, you see it today, even, you know, the kids that are, you know, wrestling together at 5 years old. I mean, they're wrestling together, you know, in high school, college and beyond. I mean, it's really the same group. And I think that's one of the, you know, most interesting things about our sport is just, you know, it is kind of that close knit group, that bond that really kind of ties everything together.
You attended Cornell, and this was still in an era where Cornell was building up and they were doing some really good things. Was Cornell really the only program for you to attend when you got out of high school?
No, not at all, actually. You know, I initially probably started the recruiting process a little late, even for that time. You know, it wasn't really on the radar at the time when it all started. I think for me personally, it was a little too close to home to kind of really understand that, hey, I've got everything I need right in my backyard. So, you know, I trained there, you know, with their club and whatnot growing up. And, you know, I went to their camps when I was 8 years old, and, you know, throughout, you know, my entire youth growing up. So it was kind of one of those things as I dove deeper into the recruiting process, you know, I just kind of realized that, you know, hey, I've got everything I need right here at home. And, you know, I think probably the time that I really, you know, really started taking it serious was, you know, I was obviously looking at Cornell. I was looking at, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know if I wanted to go in the Ivy League or, you know, I was getting really recruited heavily by Minnesota too. And I remember looking up Southern Scuffle results and seeing that Cornell had actually placed higher than Minnesota at the Southern Scuffle that year. And, you know, that's when it kind of all clicked for me, like, wow, like, you know, this is an up and coming program, you know, I can go here and have success and get it done being close to home, you know, and family was a big piece of that. I wanted to, you know, still be involved with my family at a really high level. They were always huge supporters of me. So at the end of the day, it just made sense.
So when you say something like that, I think that's really important piece of how you get recruited is that even now as you're a head wrestling coach is that, hey, if one of your guys has a big win and it gets out there on social media, that might be the difference between getting a guy and not getting a guy, that those details really do matter. Is that kind of what you're saying?
I think it does, you know, and again, I mean, the timing, you know, is always a big piece. I mean, you know, sometimes the timing's there, or sometimes it isn't, but, you know, certainly, you know, having people that can see that, you know, that success that you're having with other individuals, you know, then it's just about building that relationship and that bond where, you know, they trust you and that, you know, they know that you've got their best interest at heart and, you know, you can go and be successful at that school.
So Troy, if you hadn't, gone to Cornell, would you have been a Gopher?
You know, I more than likely, probably. You know, I mean, I was also considering Harvard pretty heavily at the time. I was considering West Virginia a little bit. You know, again, I didn't really know what I wanted. And, you know, again, it just at the end of the day, just all made sense to go to Cornell.
So taking what you went through as a recruit, have you applied any of that to your recruiting as a coach, because so much of what you guys have done here in recent years has been built upon keeping Colorado kids in Colorado?
Yeah. Well, one of the things, you know, the biggest thing that I appreciated about Cornell was, you know, again, I mean, you had guys before me, the Travis Lees and guys like that, but, you know, I think it was, you know, really my class that took Cornell to that next level. And, you know, I took a lot of pride in that as an athlete. And, you know, when I, you know, took this job at Northern Colorado, I mean, a big piece of that was I wanted to build something from the ground up. And, you know, I knew it could be done because I was part of it myself. And, you know, again, we wanted to do that here. And again, I think we're well on our way.
Is it to the level now when you walk into the Colorado State Tournament that people recognize you? They know that it's Troy Nickerson. They know that you're trying to build something at UNC.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to think so, you know, I mean, kind of, you know, it seems like anywhere I go, I mean, especially here in Greeley, but, you know, all around the state, you know, I mean, people, you know, they see my shirt and they want to, you know, they want to talk about the program. You know, I mean, I hear it in passing. I hear people just talking about it. I mean, you know, I remember even last year, you know, we were doing some community service at a fundraising event we have here on campus, you know, that supports our women's programs. And, you know, it's a women's walk. And, you know, there's a group of ladies that were walking through and, you know, they're like, oh, that's the wrestling team right there. Like, yeah, they're supposed to be pretty good next year. You know, so I mean, people are definitely starting to take notice. And, you know, it's nice to see, you know, especially people in the state really get behind something, because, you know, again, I do believe that we've got a really high talent level, talent pool here in the state. And again, if we can keep them all at home, we can really do something special here.
Are you aware that that part of recruiting works? And I'll just give you an example, like say Tom Brands or Gable walks into the Iowa State tournament, just seeing them is a big deal. Are you comfortable with that role, that, hey, just your presence has an impact and an influence on what happens?
Absolutely. You know, and again, I mean, I learned a lot of, you know, kind of, you know, my head coaching skills from, you know, Rob Cole, who is obviously my coach. And, you know, again, I think he's one of the best at it in the country, you know, just, you know, being able to, you know, sell that vision and go out and build a program from the ground up. And, you know, so I definitely realize the impact it has. And, you know, again, when I first got here, I mean, that was, you know, one of my first priorities, to making sure that, you know, I reached out to the community, reaching out to our alumni. You know, I mean, even, you know, as recent as last year, you know, I was on the phone with, you know, every head coach, high school head coach in the state of Colorado that I could get a hold of, and, you know, just kind of touching base with them and you letting them know that, hey, you know, we're here, we want to keep your student athletes, but also, you know, I'm here to help. And, you know, I think that's a big piece of it as well. You know, the better our high school programs can get here in the state, you know, the better talent pool I'm going to have to recruit from, selfishly. So I want to see these schools continue to have success. And again, I think we've got some great high school coaches here in the state.
You guys, Colorado had the top two pound for pound recruits in the 2019 class in our rankings. You guys got one of them, Andrew Aliris. The other one was Colton Schultz. What is driving that push at the high school level right now, where we're seeing a pretty good talent wave coming through Colorado?
Well, you know, I first kind of became aware of the talent level of Colorado back in 2011. I was still competing on and off, and I had actually moved out to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs for about 6 months. And, you know, obviously I was training, you know, that was my number one priority. But in my free time, I did spend some time with some of the local clubs in the Colorado Springs and Denver area. And, you know, being able to, you know, just get my hands on some of those kids and work with them, you know, I realized, you know, at a very young age that, you know, hey, these kids are going to be good. They're going to be special, you know? And, you know, it's funny now, you know, coming through, I'm actually recruiting these kids now. And, you know, I go back and I've got these relationships with them that, you know, again, some of them, you know, I remember some of them, it's like, hey, you know, yeah, you remember working with my son, you know, when, you know, he was 5 years old. And I'm like, oh yeah, I did do that, didn't I? And, you know, and now seeing them and, you know, I mean, they're turning these superstars. So it's definitely interesting. But that was when it first really came on my radar that, hey, there's a lot of talent here in the state. And, you know, again, I think it's only continuing to get better.
Are you going to recruit Steve O'Poulin?
You can't say that, Kyle.
I can't talk about kids right now.
I mean, I can at least
try to get him in trouble. You can't do that to our guests.
Well, thanks for throwing me under the bus here and making me feel like
you're trying to throw Troy under the bus.
Yeah, but you could have just said no. You could have just said I'm not going to. So that's all you had to do. But are you going to recruit New York? How about that?
You know, I'd love to. You know, I think, you know, as our program has continued to grow, you know, we've started to, you know, slowly branch out and, you know, work back more east. And, you know, again, when I took over this program, we had 5.5 scholarships, you know, so really it was critical to work the home state. And then, you know, also we've got the Western Undergraduate Exchange Program, which, you know, is kind of a reduced tuition for states west of here. So that's kind of really been our base for now. But as we've continued to get, you know, this is the first year we've actually reached the 9.9 equivalency. You know, we are starting to go back east. And, you know, again, we got to transfer in Austin Matthews from Pennsylvania this year. I mean, I would love to go back to, you know, my home roots a little bit more and continue to get more of those kids out here as well.
Troy, can you share Austin's story? I mean, he started like what Northern Colorado is his third school now. And how, like, is this his seventh year?
It is. Yeah.
How is so he able to get this
year eligibility?
You might be the first in college wrestling history to get a guy seventh year. How'd this happen?
Well, there's one other that I've heard of, and that was Joe Booth. I think he wrestled at Hofstra and Drexel. But, you know, it was really just a situation where, you know, he reached out to us, you know, kind of seen, you know, what we're, you know, he's in the transfer portal. And, you know, again, when I saw him in that transfer portal, I was like, there's no way this guy has eligibility left. But, you know, he reached out to us and we started talking, you know, and just kind of hearing his story a little bit. And, you know, again, he's kind of been through the ringer. You know, he's had a ton of injuries, you know, he's missed a lot of seasons, you know, and, you know, I kind of, after hearing his story, went to my compliance office and, you know, we just kind of, we talked about it, you know, we had a long conversation like, hey, you know, this is what this kid's gone through, you know, is this a possibility? And, you know, my compliance officer said, well, you know, it's not a no, but it's going to take some work. And, you know, we kind of just went through the process. My assistant coach, Garrett Kiley, you know, really did a lot of the legwork on it and helping Austin kind of, you know, go through that process. But at the end of the day, you know, he was granted that extra year eligibility through the NCAA. So, you know, he's here, he's in grad school. He just finished up his first semester of grad school. He had a 4.0 GPA. You know, he's really doing fantastic for us right now. And, you know, on the wrestling side of it, you know, we're trying to just get him back in the swing of things. You know, he just, you know, competed this past weekend in his first tournament that he's competed in 2.5 years, you know? So it's for him, it's kind of just relearning, you know, kind of himself and, you know, how to compete a little bit, but, you know, the talent level's there and, you know, I expect him to be right there in the hunt come March.
Does Air Force feel like a rivalry yet?
You know, it is in the sense that, you know, they're the other Division I program in the state, but at the same time, I mean, it is, you know, a different animal. You know, they are a military academy. So, there's not many times where we're, you know, recruiting against them, getting in those recruiting battles, things like that. I mean, you know, if we had more of a rival, I mean, it's definitely our neighbor to the north up in Wyoming. You know, and again, I think we're continuing to, you know, to push the envelope there each and every year. And, you know, again, hopefully this is the year that we can finally, you know, turn the tables on them and make it more of a rivalry.
Do you think the Big 12 can challenge the Big 10 for conference domination at some point?
I do. You know, I really do. You know, I mean, obviously the Big 10, you know, has some fantastic programs in it. And I think one of the best things the Big 12 could have done was adding in those affiliate schools. And, you know, the best part about it right now, too, is, you know, like us, you know, these other, you know, smaller programs that are affiliates now are stepping up to the table, you know, as far as resources go and things like that. So, you know, we're continuing to add more and more depth. You know, what was it last year, 2 years ago, we added Fresno and UNI. They're going to help us significantly. You know, I think we're certainly well on our way to challenging them at the highest level.
Yeah, I got to go way back. I think there was a year gap when you started at Cornell between you and Travis Lee. I don't think you guys probably ever worked out together, but if you did, what do you remember about Travis Lee?
Yeah. So Travis, yeah, he graduated, I believe the year or 2 years before I got on campus. But, again, I used to go up and work with the club. So I'd get to roll with Travis every once in a while. And then also Travis was getting his master's degree the first 2 years I was there. And then he was also our volunteer coach, my sophomore year, I believe. So, you know, I definitely roll with Travis a lot. And the biggest thing I remember about Travis is he was such a competitor. I mean, that dude was an absolute animal. I mean, you know, out of everybody that I've probably ever worked out with in my life, you know, on a consistent basis, he's probably the only guy that I've never actually beaten in a match. you know, I mean, he was special, you know, obviously, you know, based on his accolades, but, you know, just a great competitor and, you know, he was a fantastic coach as well. And, you know, obviously he's gone on to do very well for himself, you know, here now.
And that guy probably gets underappreciated, 2-time NCAA champion. And maybe at one point was the best wrestler to come out of Cornell. What should people know about him that made him unique? You talked about his, not wanting to lose and was competitive, but tell us about him and why he was a special wrestler.
Well, I mean, again, I think he did everything right, you know, and, you know, his work ethic was insane. You know, I mean, you talk about pushing past boundaries and whatnot. I mean, I remember seeing him on a treadmill, you know, literally going so hard that he passed out on the treadmill. You know, I mean, just things like that, you know, just it's certainly hard to get kids to push to those type of levels. And he just had that, you know, and I mean, incredibly talented. I mean, again, I think, you know, he probably didn't even reach his full potential, to be honest. You know, I mean, I think if he was healthy towards the end of his career, I think you would have seen him on an Olympic team and, you know, been doing very well for himself. So, I mean, he was just, you know, that one of a kind athlete that, you know, just had no limits.
What did going to Iowa State do for you?
You know, Iowa State was a great experience for me. You know, again, I got done competing. I was actually going to go to medical school for, you know, that was kind of my goal, you know, ever since, you know, I got to Cornell and, you know, obviously I, you know, was well on track for that. But at the end of the day, you know, I really just fell in love with coaching. You know, I really appreciated what my coaches had done for me in my career and the impact that they had on me and, you know, in my life. And I wanted to have that same impact on other student athletes. So, you know, that was really why I got into coaching. And then, you know, again, I probably could have stayed at Cornell, you know, I could have stayed there forever. But I knew for myself to be able to grow, you know, I felt like at the time I had a pretty good idea of, you know, how the Cornell system ran. And, again, I spent a year coaching the club program there with Finger Lakes. And, you know, I wanted to see something else. And, you know, when the opportunity to go to Iowa State came up, you know, it was, you know, a good just 180 for me more than anything, you know, just going to see something, you know, a program that, you know, has the resources that, you know, kind of has everything it needs to be successful, you know, and just, you know, being in a, you know, legitimate conference where you can go and, you know, the sky's the limit a little bit. So, you know, I kind of always say, you know, for me, my coaching philosophies and, you know, how I train my program and whatnot, you know, kind of a lot of those CEO type of skills and whatnot, you know, I took from the Cornell program. But, you know, as far as running a room, running a practice, you know, running my, you know, managing my student athletes, I took a lot of that from the Iowa State side. And again, it was just a great experience for me.
Both of your assistants are guys that you connected with there. You mentioned Garrett Kiley, but also Michael Marino. What made them good fits for your staff?
Oh, you know, again, it was just trying to get variety. You know, again, I wanted to get guys that were good at, you know, things that, you know, maybe I struggled in a little bit and, you know, just get some guys that, you know, really had, you know, were passionate about coaching, you know, and, you know, Michael Moreno, he was a student athlete of mine at Iowa State. You know, I didn't work with Mike a lot, honestly, individually at Iowa State, but, you know, I knew the type of competitor he was and kind of what he brought to the table. You know, I mean, he was a guy that, you know, probably wasn't the most athletic as a student athlete and really had to work for everything that he got, you know, and, you know, I think, you know, his story just in general, you know, is really one of the biggest reasons why I wanted Mike to be part of my staff. You know, his story, I mean, his freshman year, I think he was 4-17 as a freshman and, you know, really just didn't have the success. And I got there that summer and I spent a decent amount of time with Mike that summer, you know, just kind of watching him train, you know, overseeing him, getting to know him and, you know, going into his sophomore year, you know, goes in and he wins 31 matches and becomes an All-American for the first time. And, you know, seeing that type of turnover, you know, again, I mean, I bust him all the time and he, you know, partially agrees, partially disagrees. You know, I'm like, Mike, you didn't really get that much better just in 1 year. You know, it was the attitude change. It was the mental side of things and that he figured out. And I think that's so big for these student athletes right now, just that mental side of the game. And again, he's been able to instill that in a lot of our athletes. And, you know, that was one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to get him here. And then, you know, a guy like Garrett Kiley, I mean, Garrett, you know, again, I mean, he's really worked his way up through the coaching ranks. I got to know him. He was working with the club at Iowa State when I was there, and he's just a tireless worker. You know, I mean, he's, you know, he's great behind the scenes. He, you know, he's great at thinking outside the box and, you know, just really, you know, he knows the sport inside and out, you know, and, again, I mean, when the opportunity came up for him to join us, I mean, you know, I just jumped at it 'cause I knew he was the right guy for the job.
Kevin Jackson was the coach at Iowa State, head coach when you were an assistant there. He's just down the road from you. Do you lean on him? Do you leverage his position at USA Wrestling?
Yeah, I talk to Kevin all the time, he is just down the road now, which is nice, but, we developed a great relationship, when I was at Iowa State, and, that's, a lifelong friendship that we've developed and will continue to develop, but, just having a guy like that who, again, from a technical standpoint, just knows the sport inside and out. I mean, it's hard to not be able to pick a guy's brain like that whenever you can, just because, he's done it himself, but, he's also coached athletes that have done it. And, so he just knows what it takes to win.
When I think back to your career, there were some injuries that came along with that. As you look back on how you approached your career, do you think you wrestled too much, or what would be the right formula if you had advice for a kid coming up?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I don't think I did wrestle too much. I think you do see the case where you see a lot of younger athletes overtraining, overcompeting. I don't know if that was the case with me. I think it was a little bit of just, bad luck, to be honest. But, again, I think it is really important, especially for the youth wrestlers and, coming up through high school and whatnot, to really be patient. And, again, everybody, wants to get them on the fast track to success. But, just really learning the fundamentals and growing as a, as a student athlete and being able to, develop the skills necessary to win at the highest levels. And then, once you finally get to that level, then that's the time to put it all together. So, again, we've definitely done some of that with our athletes here and how we train and how we compete, just kind of, taking that slow road and, warming guys up into it, especially our younger guys and, guys that have, been hit with the injury bug a little bit in the past. And again, so far we've been pretty successful with, getting them to have that success, by competing less, maybe being a little smarter with our training instead of training harder and just making sure they're in great shape, they're in great mental mind, and just going out there and being able to get the job done when they need to.
Were you pretty beat up after college? Did that really affect your ability to compete in freestyle?
A little bit. Yeah. I took about a year and a half off after, my senior year of college. And, during that time, I really didn't do anything. I was getting on the mat a little bit once I finally healed, just with the athletes I was coaching, but it was more just taking a step back from the sport. And, kind of during that time, I did realize that, hey, I feel pretty good right now. And, I still thought I could compete on the level. I knew I had the skills to. At the end of the day, my body just really couldn't handle the level of training I felt like I needed to do to be the best in the world. And that was kind of, when I made that decision it was finally time to step away. But, again, I mean, health is a big factor into success. I think, timing has to be right. And, unfortunately I never got there, but, again, I don't think it was for, lack of ability. It was just, health and just timing more than anything.
Troy, what made you interested in the Northern Colorado job?
Well, it's funny, to be honest. I mean, I always bust my AD about it, just because, when, the first time he called me and, asked if I was interested in the job, I said no. And, again, I that was me just kind of being ignorant, to be honest. I didn't really know a lot about the program. All I knew was, I see them around a little bit. They don't have a ton of success. I just assumed, there was no resources here. There was, there was no foundation to grow. And, again, kind of after that first conversation, I got a call from Mike Moyer, our director of our coaches association. He's just kind of told me, like, just hear me out. It's not as bad as it seems. And, I did. And, a couple of things that, one of the biggest things that I, grew to understand was at the time we had a $5.5 million endowment for wrestling here at Northern Colorado. And, that was one thing that really intrigued me and, wanted me to hear more, because, I knew that, you know, with something like that, you were going to have a stable foundation that could continue to grow, you know, and we've been able to continue to grow that endowment up to about $7 million right now. And, you know, it's allowed us to leverage a lot of things in the community, on the campus, to be able to grow our program. And, you know, like I said, we had 5.5 scholarships. Now we're fully funded. You know, I've been able to get other assistant coaches in here through other fundraising efforts and things like that. And, you know, again, for us, this is just a start. And again, I think, you know, the sky is the limit here. You know, we talked about the talent level in the state. That was obviously a huge attraction to me. And, you know, just living here in Colorado as well, you know, I knew it was a beautiful place to live and, you know, I, you know, wanted to be able to raise my family here.
What do you do while you're there in Colorado?
Unfortunately, I don't get to take advantage of living here as much as I'd like to. You know, I mean, it's a beautiful state. You know, we get over 300 days of sun. I mean, it's one of the sunniest places in the country. You know, kind of the joke is, I mean, if you can't find something to do in Colorado, you're just not looking hard enough, you know, because there's so much to do. I mean, the weather's beautiful year round. You know, it's just a great place to live. You know, my wife is, you know, she's fallen in love with the place. She absolutely loves it here, which is really important to me because if she's not happy, then, you know, it's going to make things at home tough, which, you know, are obviously going to impact, you know, the job that I'm doing, you know? So, again, that's really important to me. Like I said, I haven't gotten a chance to take advantage of enough of the, you know, the things that we have around here to be, you know, to really enjoy it. But, you know, at the same time, it's a great place to live, and, you know, my family loves it here.
Let's go back to your career for a second. You had a 14-second fall when you made your NCAA championship run over Joey Fio. What did you pin him with?
I did that same knee pick that I hit on Coleman Scott, actually, in the Beast of the East finals. You know, it was kind of one of those things that, you know, I remember he took a shot on me right off the whistle, and I just kind of fell into it, to be honest, you know. But, you know, again, it's one of those things you drill over and over, and, you know, when you feel it, you just do it. I mean, it, you know, you don't even think about it. It's just a reaction more than anything. And, you know, luckily, you know, I just kind of fell into it, and certainly made my road a lot easier.
Some tough guys at 125 pounds when you were in the weight bracket. Give us maybe your top two or three guys that were tough to compete against.
You know, I always say this, you know, the toughest match that I ever had in college with my freshman year, I think it was either quarterfinals or semifinals at Cliff Keen Invitational in Vegas. I wrestled Chad Mendez, and he was lightning quick. And I remember, I think he took me down two or three times right in that first period, and I didn't even know what hit me, you know. And, you know, luckily, you know, it's a 7-minute match, and I was able to wrestle back, and I was able to get that victory. But, you know, when you kind of think about, you know, guys that it's like, hey, I'd probably, you know, if I have to wrestle him again, I will, you know, but, you know, I'd rather not. I mean, he was certainly at the top of that list.
How do you beat Nick Simmons? You beat him when you were a freshman, and he was just a leech on top. What kind of game plan do you have to beat a guy like that?
Well, you know, the game plan was don't go underneath him, you know, and again, you know, we had a 0-0 first period, second period, I chose neutral, you know, and then third period, he kind of, you know, he turned the tides on me and he picked top. And, you know, he probably thought he was going to just, you know, roll the victory, just kind of, you know, ride me out there. And, you know, again, I think one of the reasons why I was able to have so much success as a freshman, a true freshman, was just, you know, that I was a good mat wrestler. And, you know, I was able to reverse him. You know, I can't remember the exact position, but I was able to reverse him in that period. And, you know, again, that ultimately got me the victory. And, you know, it was probably a big reason why I did have the success that I did as a true freshman.
Why does that happen? Is it hard to stay motivated through a college career? I just think of a guy like Dean Heil, who won two championships, sophomore, junior, and then doesn't place a senior year. And your lowest finish was your senior year. Why do you think that happens throughout a college career?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it can happen to, you know, any guy for, you know, a bunch of reasons. You know, I mean, I think, you know, you talk about the health piece. You know, that always comes into play. And, you know, then the motivation piece, I think, is big as well. You know, it's always easy to wrestle kind of as the underdog, you know, and you know, it's easy to kind of be that guy that, you know, has nothing to lose and can go out there and just throw the kitchen sink at you. But, you know, once you are the guy to beat, you know, and you've got that, you know, that target on your chest, you know, it's tough to sometimes, you know, wrestle how you need to wrestle to be successful. And, you know, guys kind of tighten up and, you know, that's when you get exposed. And, you know, so I think there's a lot of things that go into it. And, you know, when you see these guys that, you know, seem like they're unstoppable, unbeatable, you know, they go and win 4 national titles. I truly appreciate how impressive it is, just because, you know, it is hard, you know, to wrestle with that target on your back. And, you know, again, I there's multiple reasons why, you know, guys can feel that pressure or whatnot, but it's real.
Well, let's flip that around to the new guy coming in, and you got one of those guys in Andrew Alirez. What will it take for him to be in the mix to win a national title this year? What kind of things does he
need? For him, it's just, you know, health and just, you know, being motivated to go out and just do what he knows how to do. He is ultra talented. You know, he is by far the most talented and intuitive wrestler that I've ever coached. I know he has the skills. I know he can win a national title this year. You know, again, it's just about managing him at this point and, you know, making sure that he's ready to go each and every time he steps on the mat, you know. And, you know, that's why we took a little break with him here this last month or so, just kind of, you know, just letting him regroup and get ready to go again for this next push. And, you know, just kind of making a strong push into the, you know, the rest of the year here and into the postseason.
You guys locked him down pretty early, and I know he's got a brother on your team as well, but were there any nervous moments in recruiting after he started having a lot of high level success that, you know, maybe some traditional powers might come in here and try to grab him?
Yeah. So I actually have his cousin that's on my team. That's a year older than him. So his cousin's here. And, you know, one of the things about Andrew, I mean, you know, he is very, you know, he has a ton of pride for his home state and especially his home city of Greeley here, you know. And again, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you kind of fall into it a little bit. I mean, you know, he grew up 8 houses down the street from me, you know, literally. So, you know, I mean, when I go to do a home visit with the kid, I mean, he's, you know, it's literally walking down the street. And, you know, he just felt comfortable with us at the end of the day. You know, we got to know him from a very early age. He worked with our local sports club here, you know, since the time he was a freshman, you know, really since I got here. And, you know, it was just the relationship piece that kept him here. And, you know, he knew that, you know, he had the tools here to be able to get it done. And, you know, he also, you know, has that chip on his shoulder a little bit, like, hey, I want to be the first. I want to be the guy that puts UNC on the map. And he's certainly well on his way.
You also have Moshe Schwartz, another Colorado native, true freshman, having a lot of success this year. What went into his decision to compete right out of the gate, and what do you like about what you've seen out of him so far?
Yeah, Moshe's been fantastic. You know, I mean, again, we've got 2 really solid competitors at that weight class, 2 true freshmen, and him and Therius Robeson right now, you know. And, you know, for me, you know, Moshe was just, you know, he's kind of one of those guys that he's always competed at the highest level. He's won at every level. He's been through the grind. You know, again, he's, you know, trained really hard his entire life. You know, here in Colorado, he spent some time out in Wyoming Seminary, you know, with Scott Green, a guy that, you know, I grew up with. You know, he coached me when I was growing up, so I knew he had the fundamentals to be successful. And, you know, he made that freshman transition faster than any of our freshmen, you know, even Andrew Lira. So, you know, I knew that he had, you know, the heart and, you know, the head to go out there and compete right away. And, again, you know, he went out to Vegas this, you know, a couple weeks ago here, had a really successful tournament. You know, I think he's right there with the best of the guys in the country. So he's another one that, you know, I think he can win it this year, you know, and it's about just keeping him healthy and, you know, keeping his mind right and, you know, continuing to grind and get better on a daily basis.
You mentioned Scott Green there, Wyoming Seminary. They're coming off a win at the Ironman. What's unique about him?
You know, Scott's probably one of the smartest human beings I know, you know. I mean, and he, like I said, he just knows wrestling too, you know. He knows wrestling better than anybody, you know. And again, I was fortunate enough to grow up with him. He was my freestyle and Greco coach, you know, so I've known him for a long, long time. And, you know, he just, you know, he knows how to make his athletes tick. And, you know, that was the, you know, why, again, you know, when we were pulling Moshe, I knew that, you know, he was ready just because he had been through Scott's system, and I know how Scott trains his athletes. So, you know, he's just very intuitive. He knows wrestling better than anybody. And, you know, again, it's no surprise to me that he's having the success he is, you know, over there in Pennsylvania.
Hey, big tournament, big high school tournament in your backyard this week, this weekend. Jimmy John's tournament. It's going to be streamed live on Track Wrestling. You going to be there, Troy?
Yeah, I'll be here. You know, it's in our home gym again this year. You know, it was a tournament that, you know, we used to run way back in the day as kind of a fundraiser for our program. And then we sold it off sometime before I got here. And, you know, again, it's continued to grow. And, you know, it kind of outgrew this place for a quick minute. They took it over to the Budweiser Center in Loveland, which is, you know, just 10 minutes down the road. But, you know, they wanted to bring it back this year. And, you know, of course, when they brought it to us, I was like, heck yeah. You know, I want more kids to see UNC. I want to get them on campus. I want them to see, you know, kind of what we're doing here. So when the opportunity arose, I was all for it.
If we could end with this, it's one of my favorite stories and just one of the most motivational moments I've seen was when you won the NCAA championships in 2009. You skipped the press conference. You ran straight out and went to your dad, who I believe had cancer. I think they airlifted him in to be able to watch that championship. When you think about that now, how meaningful was that moment to you?
You know, it was very meaningful. You know, again, I think it was one of those things where, you know, again, I needed to go and show him that appreciation for everything he did for me in my career. You know, I was very fortunate to grow up in the situation I did where, you know, he was able to drive me all around the country, you know, exposing me to the best coaches and, you know, just getting the best for me each and every place. And, you know, so I wanted to show him that appreciation, you know, and again, I mean, it was real hard for him to get there. I probably at the time, I didn't even realize, you know, how sick he was just because I was so motivated and focused and locked in on trying to win a national title. But, you know, again, I know that was, you know, what he wanted for me. And again, I know that, you know, when he did pass there, you know, it was just, you know, I feel like he felt fulfilled that, you know, he had gotten me to where I wanted to be. And, you know, that was enough for him.
Did it hit you right away when you won it that you just needed to go see him?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I knew right away that, you know, I needed to, you know, go and thank him just because, you know, again, he was the guy that, you know, from 5 years old on, you know, was driving me all over the country, you know, exposing me to the best. And, you know, again, I just wanted to show that appreciation.
How about some of those guys that were in the Cornell program that that passed? I think Adam Fry. I don't know how well you knew him or how close you were, but when you lose someone like that, were you able to just relate to your situation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's always hard. You know, Adam was one of my main training partners. You know, we came into Cornell together. We had trained together in high school down at Blair. You know, we pushed each other at a real high level each and every day. And, you know, he was a competitor, you know, I mean, again, I mean, he died way too young. I mean, he would have been a national champion. I have no question about it, you know, and unfortunately he got sick and that happened. And, you know, again, it's, you know, you can relate back to those stories, you know, just because, you know, I was fortunate that when my dad was sick and going through that, you know, Adam had already passed, but, you know, I had an assistant coach at the time, Damian Hahn, who's now a really close friend who had been through a similar situation, you know, with his father, you know, so I spent a lot of time with Damian throughout that year, just, you know, and him kind of, you know, just being there to kind of, you know, lean on and, you know, just, you know, talk things through with, because he had been there, you know. And, you know, I remember the week even my father passed, I was actually down in South Carolina getting shoulder surgery and Damian was down there with me, you know, and having him there, you know, made things a lot easier just because, you know, he had been there, you know, and he knew kind of, you know, what I was feeling and what I was going through. And, you know, I really appreciated that. And, you know, again, I was able to pay it forward as well, you know, with a guy, Kyvan Gadsden, you know, who I coached, who went through a very similar situation. So, you know, again, I mean, it's, you know, it's those moments that, you know, as a coach, I feel like, you know, you can really get the most out of it because you know that you're really impacting somebody's life for the better.
And then with Adam, if I remember right, didn't he get in a car wreck and they found maybe a tumor the size of a softball or something? Was that how that went down?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it was just a fluke thing. He got into a car wreck. They went in to check him out and found the cancer, you know, and, you know, unfortunately they weren't able to, you know, to get it and stop it at that point. But, you know, at the time, I mean, it was, you know, it certainly made sense. I mean, I remember, you know, during that same time, he was, you know, really struggling making the weight, you know, and, you know, we had a ton of questions, you know. It's like, man, what the heck is going on? He, you know, he's struggling making weight, and little did we know he had a, you know, 5-pound tumor in his stomach that was, you know, really preventing that. So, you know, it's, you know, it's funny how things work. I mean, you know, again, unfortunately that didn't work out for the better, but, you know, it's crazy how things happen in this life.
And I'm sure you can relate it to what's happening right now with Brandon Sorensen too, can't you?
Yeah. You know, I mean, again, you the timing of these things, you know, you never know. I mean, you know, for me, I just try to trust God and, you know that he's got a plan for all of us. And, you know, again, we wish Brandon the best. I mean, you know, I remember recruiting Brandon. He's a great kid. You know, it's nice to know that the wrestling community is behind him and supporting him every step of the way.
Well, hey, you're on the cusp of some great things here at Northern Colorado. Thanks for sharing that with us. Thanks for sharing your story. And really fun to see all you're doing there at UNC. It's a program that certainly has gotten on a lot of people's radars because of your leadership, and we appreciate what you're doing.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. And, you know, appreciate the support and the follow. You know, we're certainly, you know, working hard to try to make this, you know, one of the top programs in the country, and I think we're well on our way. So I appreciate the support.
Hey, we appreciate that, and all the best the rest of the season.
All right, thank you.
Hey, thanks, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Troy. That was fun.
Hey, anytime. Thanks, guys.
Is UNI coming out there this year?
They are January 17th.
Okay. Well, have a good time. I think you and Schwab should go at it if you get a chance.
Yeah, we'll definitely give them some crap about being a Red Sox fan as well.
See, you knew that. That's pretty cool. You knew he was a Red Sox fan.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That shows you how that gets out there, so. All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Troy.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks. Once again, one of those interviews where you think, oh, we might get 25, 30 minutes, and then we go 50 minutes, and it keeps going. And then by the end, you say, we could have gone another 50 minutes. But really fun to catch up with Troy Nickerson, get his thoughts on Beast of the East and a lot of tournaments. But I think especially with Beast of the East, you really got a feel for how difficult that tournament is. And then once you look at the names of who they wrestled, you go back retroactively and see where they are now. It's really fun to see the competition and how they ended up.
Yeah, wait till we put out those lists this week that have the alumni, all the NCAA champions, world champions, world medalists on there. It's a pretty staggering list, the amount of high-level competitors who've competed in the Beast of the East through the years.
Where do you think this ranks? I mean, I'm learning about it, and of course I knew about it, but I didn't know the scope of it. I just don't know that there's really a harder tournament out there. It's got to be in the upper echelon, you know, like top two or three toughest tournaments in the country, I would think.
Absolutely. And that really struck home with me last year, just watching early round wrestleback matches, the level of competitors that are in the wrestlebacks in the first and second round and watching them. And it's staggering how good the guys are that don't even make the stand in certain cases. I mean, we had, I think three guys are ranked number one in the country. Didn't make it the finals last year, got upset. So it's a daunting tournament. I'm excited to get back out there, watch it again, and get your take on it a week from now after going out there for the first time.
It's going to be a lot of fun to see that. And I have to imagine that the quarterfinal semifinals has a championship finals vibe, doesn't it? Just
it's pretty intense.
Quality of competition.
Yeah.
It's probably top-level guys against top-level guys going at it at that point. So can't wait. And boy, when you the entry list alone just gets you excited. And I think, what did you say, over 100 teams entered into this tournament?
Yep.
That is insane. So make sure that you watch Beast of the East on Track Wrestling. And if you like good wrestling, doesn't matter if you care about high school, college, international, this is going to be one that you absolutely will want to watch. Great to have Troy Nickerson on the program. For Andrew Hamilton, I am Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
This
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.